our daughter Jessie loves playing detective.
A clue.
But since we discovered she has sensitive skin, we've been playing detective too.
We thought the problem was our puppy.
But it was actually our old detergent.
Aha! Uh-huh.
So we switched to Tide Free and Gentle. Tide Free and Gentle provides an excellent Tide clean, and it doesn't leave behind irritating residues like dyes or perfumes, so it's gentle on your skin.
Case closed.
If it's got to be clean, it's got to be Tide Free and Gentle.
AM 1340 and 98.3 FM KIHR. News Radio 1300 and 103.9 KACI. And GorgeRadio.com present the Mid-Columbia Today Show with Mark Bailey.
Mid-Columbia Today is brought to you by GorgeNet, Gorge Recovery Service, and Skyline Hospital.
Now, here's Mark Bailey.
And good morning. It is 8:06 in the morning. I'm Mark Bailey, Mid-Columbia Today, News Radio 1300, 1039 KACI, and on 98.3 FM, 1340 AM, KIHR. We thank you for joining us again. Also on GorgeRadio.com, if you're listening on Alexa on the KIHR skill, or if you're just listening some other time through our podcast, and it's a Tuesday, the 1st of July. A new month has arrived. And we're just 3 days away, of course, from the 4th of July holiday. Here's what we're doing this morning. Denise Dietrich-Bochum is with us from the Fort Downs Museum Anderson Homestead Foundation. We're going to talk about, they're going to be raising money to frame a flag. It's a particular special flag, not just any flag, so we'll talk about that. Second half of the program, Wasco County Commissioner Scott Hagee is going to jump in here. As I'm sure you well are aware by now, there was no transportation package passed in the Oregon State Legislature. What does this mean for our local governments? We'll talk about that with Scott on the program. But first, as we always do, let's tell you about this day as men and what it means at least to some people. 1863, the pivotal three-day Civil War Battle of Gettysburg, resulting in a Union victory, began in Pennsylvania. This day in 1867, Canada became a self-governing Dominion of Great Britain as the British North America Act took effect. Called Dominion Day until 1982, the national holiday is now known as Canada Day. In 1903, the first Tour de France began. It would end on July 19th. The winner was Maurice Guerin. 1944, delegates from 44 countries began meeting at Bretton Woods, New Hampshire, where they agreed to establish the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. 1963, on this day, the post office inaugurated the five-digit zip code. 1973, the Drug Enforcement Administration was established. 1984, the first movie rated PG-13 came out. It was Red Dawn, starring Patrick Swayze. 1991, President George H.W. Bush nominated Federal Appeals Court Judge Clarence Thomas to the Supreme Court, beginning an ultimately successful confirmation process marked by allegations of sexual harassment. 1997, Hong Kong reverted to Chinese rule after 156 years as a British colony. And in 2015, after more than a half a century of hostility, the U.S. and Cuba declared they would reopen embassies in each other's capitals, marking a historic full restoration of diplomatic relations between the Cold War foes. Our days for today, we've got a few of them. It's American Zoo Day today. It is Devotion to Duty Day. It is Early Bird Day, as in gets the worm, blah, blah, blah. International Joke Day today. So I guess tell a joke of some kind. It's International Reggae Day today. So if you are into reggae, it's your day today. Pull out the Bob Marley albums. It's National Financial Freedom Day. Wouldn't we like to all be at that point? National Postal Workers Day, which, you know, this kind of ties in with the zip code starting. And it's National Television Heritage Day today. Didn't quite get an explanation as to why, but apparently we're celebrating the heritage of television. Our food today. This is a day I always get in trouble. It's International Chicken Wing Day. And I tend to get in trouble when I point out I think it's the most overrated food maybe we've ever come up with. I mean, people who just go crazy over chicken wings. I think what you want is just to have a lot of sauce. That's what you're doing. It's definitely not the best part of the chicken. But I not say, then people always say, well, you must hate chicken wings. No, I don't. It's just, I just think they're overhyped. It's National Ginger Snap Day. That's a good cookie. And finally, this can be good. It can be bad. It depends on how crazy the person gets. It's National Creative Ice Cream Flavor Day, which means at some point today, we'll get some sort of news story from some ice cream shop looking for attention, and they've created some ice cream flavor that will just, you know, like chicken and waffles or something like that, something odd. Now, having said that, there could be some creative ones that are pretty good, usually involving chocolate. But there it all is for what it's worth, which may not be a whole lot. 8:10 in the morning, we're going to come back and talk about the Grant flag right after this.
I am Amy Knowles. I grew up here in White Salmon. I call this my home. I am the pharmacy director here at Skyline Health. Skyline Hospital is more than just a hospital. It's a lifeline for our community. Our patients are my neighbors, my friends, the people I grew up with. At the end of the day, it's about caring for the people who trust us with their health. I'm proud to be part of a team who takes caring for our community so seriously and a priority for everything we do here every day. I am Skyline.
Heartache is the pits. Having trouble letting go of your old, antique, dare we say, nearly departed copier? When the day finally comes to let go, we'll be there to help. Your friends at Bonds Printing and Office Supply feel your pain. We've heard your cries of frustration and will help you in your transition from the old to a new state-of-the-art multifunctional office machine from the award-winning line of Konica Minolta right here at Bonds. But seriously, we'll be there in your hour of need. Bonds Printing and Office Supply, 308 Union, The Dalles.
Looking for a summer experience your child will never forget? Sign them up for Empowered Movement Aerials Summer Camps in Hood River. Kids ages 4 and up will soar through the air, build strength and flexibility, and gain confidence in a fun, supportive environment. With small class sizes, every student gets personalized attention while learning the magical art of aerial performance. Let their imagination take flight this summer. Visit empoweredmovementaerial.org to register today. Maybe sign yourself up for an adult class, too.
The best words to hear at the TSA security checkpoint? You're good to go. All it takes is a little preparation. Get to the airport early. Bring a carry-on bag that fits in the overhead. And have an acceptable ID. Not all state-issued IDs will cut it. Check out tsa.gov/ID and see which TSA acceptable IDs make the grade, like a real ID or passport.
Before you jet, do a little prep. And you're good to go. Check out tsa.gov/ID or the MyTSA app.
Mid-Columbia Today is a public affairs program of Bi-Coastal Media Columbia River, AM 1340 and 98.3 FM KIHR, News Radio 1300 and 103.9 KACI, and GorgeRadio.com. Now, back to Mark.
And we welcome you back here as our time is 8:12 in the morning, and we're happy to have with us from the Fort Dalles Museum Anderson Homestead Foundation, Denise Dietrich-Bochum. Good morning, Denise.
Good morning, Mark.
Well, thank you for coming in. We appreciate it. And before we get into the flag here, our main topic, we probably should just start out and tell people about, you know, the Fort Dalles Museum and Anderson Homestead. For those who aren't familiar, well, you know, tell us about the facility.
Well, that could take up the whole show, but the Fort Dalles Museum Anderson Homestead is actually has three pieces of it.
Okay.
The original piece is the Surgeon's Quarters, which is the only original building left from the fort. Mm-hmm. It's where the surgeon lived with his family.
Okay.
That's not where they, except for emergencies, it's not where they performed surgery or did any kind of hospital functions. And it was built in 1857.
Okay.
So it's been around a long time. Oh. Architecture is fascinating, and that houses any few remnants of the fort remain, and also some early history of the town. Yeah. The other piece of it is we have some antique vehicles, both early motorized vehicles, as well as some horse-drawn carriages, most of which traveled around the city of the Dalles for a long time. And then the last piece is the Anderson Homestead. Anderson Homestead was built in the late 1880s, south of the Dalles, about 15 miles south of the Dalles, and it was built by a Swedish immigrant family, and it represents typical, very traditional Swedish log building construction. And I say log building because there's nothing cabin-like about this. It's quite a large house.
Mm-hmm.
And that has, we have a house, a granary, a very, very large bank barn. And
a bank barn?
A bank barn. That's a Pennsylvania term. I'm okay. From Pennsylvania. And it's basically a barn that's built kind of on a hillside, a little bit of a slope.
Mm-hmm.
And the back part of the barn, it's built that way because what you do is you pull your wagons in with the hay on the top part. Mm-hmm. And that way you don't have to hand unload the hay.
Aha. So a little modernization of the basic barn at the time.
Yes, well, modernization, yeah, maybe in the 1700s.
Well, yeah, but that point, that was modernization at that point, I would think.
True. And we also have a two-seater privy.
No, a privy.
A privy.
What's that?
An outhouse.
Oh, okay. Oh, gosh. I started thinking like it was a vehicle or something, and I should have known far better than that. That's the brain isn't working yet this morning, apparently. I just want to give people an idea of the Fort Dallas Museum here before we get into. You've got a flag there, and mm-hmm. I mean, I assume you have probably a few flags maybe in your collection, but
yes, we do have a few, mm-hmm. but this one's quite special,
right? So this is called the Grant flag, and give us a little bit of a history of this.
Okay, that's great. Some of this I'll read because it's pretty well written, and some of it I'll just kind of talk about.
Okay.
Okay, so as you're aware, Civil War took place from 1860 to 1865. Fort Dalles was actually established in the 1840s.
All right.
So we had been around. The soldiers that had stationed there left during the Civil War, though, to fight on either side.
Mm-hmm.
But in 1865, some of the units returned to the fort. But by that time, they were really set up to control the Indians. Mm-hmm. By that time, the Indian Wars had moved, and the Fort Dalles was no longer very strategically placed. So they started to wind down a bit. In the meantime, the Dalles as a town had started to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1868, of course, was the next election. Lincoln was assassinated. Andrew Johnson took over, but he was not well-liked by the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1868, the Republicans decided to rally around General Grant, who was extremely successful in the Civil War. And throughout the country, what they called Grant clubs were being established. And they were just mainly formed by young men who would conduct torchlight parades and other activities to promote U.S. Grant.
Mm-hmm.
So the Dalles Club started in August of 1868, and I don't know if our listeners are familiar with a woman named Lulu Crandall.
Okay.
Lulu Crandall was extremely well known in the Dalles at that time, mm-hmm. and her parents were as well. They came over on the Oregon Trail back in about 1850, and Lulu Crandall was one of the renowned historians of the Dalles,
mm-hmm.
early history. And her father, Z. Donnell, organized the club along with C.C. Crandall, who happened to be Lulu's husband, mm-hmm. a gentleman named C.M. Grimes, and C.H. Reed of Dufour. And to help support this, the wives of the Grant Club founders mm-hmm. and members sewed a flag. It's quite a large flag. It's 7 feet by 5 feet or something. It's huge.
Now, is it an American flag?
Yes, it is an American flag with the appropriate stars at that time. But it's very, very fragile. It's been sitting in a box,
mm-hmm.
in a closet for a long time, you know, preserved with the proper paper and things like that. But it's just been sitting there because mm-hmm. nobody was really sure what it was. And we have a new museum coordinator mm-hmm. whose name's Bob Pollock. And he saw that and jumped right on it. Bob mm-hmm. has a really deep background, particularly in American history at that time,
mm-hmm.
and recognized the importance of the Grant flag and the Grant clubs and things, and wants to display it. But mm-hmm. it's huge, and like I said, it's extremely fragile. So what we're looking to do, we've contacted an organization who knows how to conserve these things to keep them from deteriorating.
Mm-hmm.
So we are looking to raise funds. Our goal is $6,000 to help conserve this flag, and then we're going to have it put in some sort of a frame to keep the just the elements out, bugs.
I was saying, it's 7 feet by 5 feet. This could be a big frame.
We are going to, it has to be very carefully folded.
Okay, so I see what you mean.
You don't want creases in the fabric or anything like that.
Okay.
So it's yes, we cannot display the whole flag. It's huge.
Somebody sent me a picture of it. I don't know if it's you or another member
of the... Yes, there's a better picture online. Columbia Community Connections did a nice little article for it.
First thing I know, I mean, it's clearly faded over time, which I guess isn't a surprise. So we talk about, I take it, this isn't an attempt to restore it, is it?
No, it is not going to be repaired or restored. It's going to be kept. What we're trying to do is just preserve
it where
in
it
its
is.
Existing condition and keep it from deteriorating further.
I assume if you tried to restore it, we'd be looking at a pretty big bill.
Oh, it would be huge. And it's, as I said, it's extremely, you can't see, you can almost see through the fabric. It's so thin.
I would assume that maybe probably given, you know, where they were located, which was the Dalles of the 1860s, even though it was a shipping route, I get that, with the Columbia River, it wasn't necessarily a place, a lot of modern amenities, even for 1860, whatever, would have been there at that point. So I would assume probably the fabric they had may not have been the greatest fabric to do this with.
They would have had appropriate, you know, women were making fancy dresses in those days.
Yeah.
And some of these were rather well-to-do women.
But 7 feet by 5 feet.
I'm not exactly 100% sure the dimensions, but I do remember hearing Bob say 7 feet.
Okay, well, it's not your average flag. I think that's fair to say at this point. So these were basically it's the same as in a lot of political campaigns of today with the candidate. I'm not sure you wrap yourself in a 7-foot by 5-foot flag, but this flag came about kind of the same way we see a lot of these things today. That was the mode of the time.
Exactly. And the flag was displayed, according to Lulu Crandall, she said that the flagstaff and rallying point stood on the knoll just west of the hospital.
Okay.
Now, you have to remember, that's not the hospital that we go to in the Dalles. It's the one downtown.
Right. So it was there. I mean, do we have an idea of kind of when it got folded up and put it away kind of deal?
No. I don't recall when Lulu Crandall donated it, but her family was pretty prominent in the day.
And so it was, so this flag is something obviously that is, I mean, this is a unique, I don't know if find is the right word because you've had it, but to now learn the history of it, this is a very unique piece then.
Oh, definitely.
Do we know if there are other Grant Club, I mean, of course, this is something that the wives, I guess, did locally here in this area. I mean, is this something that was, do we know if it was commonly done among these Grant Clubs?
That's kind of what happened. The women supported the men,
right.
And they would have had, when they had their torchlight parades and things like that, they would have had a flag.
Now, what would a torchlight parade be? I've got a picture in my mind, kind of out of Young Frankenstein, to be honest, that movie, for a torchlight, which I assume isn't quite what we're talking about here, but I assume it's self-descriptive here.
I think it's pretty self-descriptive. And the other thing is, we also have photos at the museum. We have photos of some of the early parades in the Dalles.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we have a huge photo collection. I don't remember seeing any of a torchlight parade.
Okay. Now, so how much, you say, I think $6,000, right, is what needs to be raised here. When this flag, you talk about putting, you know, kind of framing it and protecting it, is the intent to display it?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. We don't want to hide that in a closet anymore.
Oh, sure. You want to get it out there.
Because there's a lot of talking points about this flag. And so, is it time to tell people where to donate?
Yeah, let's go ahead. Yeah, we can do that. Yeah, go ahead. Actually, we're actually starting to run to our bottom of the hour. We just kind of got rolling here. Yeah, obviously, you're looking for your, I think your campaign is starting this week. You're actually starting at, quote, the 4th of July.
Yes, this is the soft opening.
I'm willing to bet if someone wants to write a check after this show, you'll be glad to take it.
Absolutely.
So if people would like to help get this flag, I mean, it's certainly a unique piece of the history of this area and this country. We would like to help in this effort. What do they do?
Okay, well, easiest thing to do is to send a check to the, and this is a long place to send it, Fort Dalles Museum Anderson Homestead Foundation, or you can shorten it to FDMAH.
Mm-hmm. All right, that'd probably be easier. Yes, if I'm writing a check, yeah.
Yeah. And so P.O. Box 591. The Dalles, Oregon, 97058.
All right.
There's also a way to donate online if you go to the Fort Dalles Museum page and scroll down till you find the foundation. Mm-hmm. And there is an online donation. You can use PayPal or a credit card.
Do you need, if you go on with the online, I assume you probably have had that button there for other purposes. Do you need to in some way indicate this is for the flag?
Yes. And with checks also, we'd appreciate that because we have several funds set aside at the foundation, so we'd like to know that this, your donation is specifically for the flag.
Mm-hmm. So once you get this, I mean, how long does it take to do the work like this to be able to
months.
Get it
for
months? Yeah, it's
going to take several months for these folks to do it.
Yeah, I mean, as you outlined the condition of it, I mean, it must be a lot of care is going to be involved.
Yes,
I would assume you mentioned it was paper, that the fabric's really thin now, but I would imagine also there's fraying involved. Probably you wonder about the stitching. There's all sorts of things that you have to be careful of.
Yes, for those who are fortunate enough to see the picture of the flag that's online, I've looked at some of those stars close up, and the stitching is...
it looks like to me I'd be terrified to touch it for fear that something would happen.
That's why you go to a professional organization.
Exactly. You guys aren't going to do it yourself in this case. This is going to be a professionally done...
Oh, absolutely.
Done operation here, obviously. And again, it's the grant flag. And what is the address for your website, by the way? I know a lot of our listeners now do their donating by online.
www.fortdallesmuseum.org.
Okay, fortdallesmuseum.org.
Pretty easy.
All you got to do, and you can, of course, use whatever search engine you want, type in Fort Dalles Museum. And before I let you get away here, we probably should mention when you guys are open and when people can see the whole facility.
Okay, well, our hours are 10 to 5, and we're open 7 days a week this time of year.
Okay.
And there's a docent around that'll give you an introduction. We always have somebody on staff, although the museum is very well signed.
Okay.
But if you have questions or, some people sort of like more of a personalized tour, so you can do that too. If you have a large group or something, you can call ahead and make special arrangements.
All right. So, but again, that's the Fort Dalles Museum. And again, the grant flag, again, you can go to fortdallesmuseum.org to donate. Or email a check to P.O. Box 591 in the Dalles, zip code 97058, and you mail it to the Fort Dalles Museum Foundation.
And one more comment.
Okay.
The foundation is a 501c3.
All right. That's always a good
thing. So your donation is tax deductible, and you will get the appropriate receipt for tax purposes. Mm-hmm.
Denise, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks for allowing us to be here.
And we're coming up on the bottom of the hour. Scott Hagee after news right after this.
It's the Hood River County Fair, July 23rd through 26th. It's 4 days of gorge summer fun. Explore 4-H, FFA, and open class exhibits. Ride the epic carnival rides, Godfrey the Magician, Juggle Mania, and Not Your Average Joe the Balloon Guy. Plus, pony rides, mutton busting, and jump the ultimate dog show. On stage, Del Rio opens for Bonda Zeta Friday, and Creedence Tribute Band opens for country music superstar Drew Baldridge Saturday. The Hood River County Fair. Get ready.
Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Price varies based on product and subscription plan.
Hey guys, let's talk ED, because millions of men experience it, but not everyone can access or afford treatments like Viagra. Well, Hims can help. Through Hims.com, you can get a full range of treatment options for ED, including daily or as-needed meds, through a 100% online process. It all starts with an online intake form. Get started at hims.com/joy. And from there, a medical provider licensed in your state will determine if ED treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is shipped to you for free. Find the ED treatment that fits your needs with options up to 95% less than the brand names. Millions of men experience ED, but Hims can help. To start your free online visit and save up to 95%, go to hims.com/joy. That's hims.com/joy for your free online visit. hims.com/joy.
Thinking of climbing our iconic Mount Hood? Mount Hood reaches over 11,000 feet. A climbing permit is needed for anyone ascending over 9,500 feet. Permits are required year-round and can be purchased at recreation.gov. These climbing permits help fund emergency rescue services on the mountain, as well as infrastructural, educational, and sanitation services. The permits range from 3-day passes for $20 to annual passes for $50.
Coffee for Mid-Columbia Today guests is provided by Hood River Coffee Roasters, the gorgeous local coffee roasters on Tucker Road on the Heights in Hood River.
8:30 in the morning on MCT. Scott Hagee, Wasco County Commissioner, is on his way. We'll have him on here in a few moments. But first, the news. A paddleboarder was found deceased in the Columbia River at Viento State Park on Saturday morning. The Skamania County Sheriff's Office dive, rescue, and recovery team came to the scene at the request of the Hood River County Sheriff's Office after a report of a 40-year-old woman falling off her board and going under. Seven divers carried out the search, and she was located deceased about 150 feet from shore in about 15 feet of water. Oregonians earning the minimum wage will receive 35 cents more per hour, the smallest annual increase in the past 10 years. Change is going into effect today. Hood River and Wasco counties go from $14.70 to $15.05 an hour. Sherman and Gillum from $13.70 to $14.05. Portland metro area, they're going from $15.95 to $16.30 an hour. Washington's fuel tax going up. Today, the gas tax in that state rises by 6 cents a gallon. First increase in 9 years for the primary revenue source sustaining Washington's transportation system. The most prominent piece of a 6-year, $3.2 billion transportation package that passed the Washington legislature this year. Lawmakers turned to the tax to contend with a projected $1 billion shortfall in the next 2-year transportation budget caused by an inflation-fueled surge in construction and flattening gas tax receipts. Oregon, now one of 11 states where adults age 65 and older outnumber children 18 and under. According to new population estimates released by the Census Bureau, it reflects a national trend. Just 5 years ago, only 3 states had more older adults than children: Florida, Vermont, and Maine. There are only 11 Oregon counties where there are more children than older adults, according to census data. Hood River County is one of them. Going to be sunny again today. Going to be warm again today. Highs in the 90s with some strong west winds maybe kicking in later on today. It'll get stronger tomorrow. The temperatures at this time, we can tell you in Hood River it's 72, and the Dalles it is 75. And it's 8:32 in the morning on Mid-Columbia Today.
Hi, it's Melissa Del Carpine here. Did you know 10 minutes is about the time it takes to make your morning coffee, finish a good dad joke, and drive to our new shop?
Yep.
We moved up the hill on Eagle Loop in Odell with more parking and in a beautiful setting. Same unbeatable service for all your vehicles. Have you been putting off getting the scheduled maintenance done on your vehicle? Come see us. We look forward to welcoming you to our new home in Odell. At Del Carpine Automotive, no job is too big or too small. We work on them all. We're gorge grown and gorge strong.
When I found out my son was using marijuana, I thought it was just part of adolescence.
Lots of teens and young people get high.
But then I found out how powerful today's concentrates are.
I couldn't believe it.
It's far more powerful than weed from the 70s, 80s, and 90s.
When teens use vapes or dabs, the potency can be 80 to 100% THC.
THC can cause addiction, hallucinations, paranoia, anxiety, and cannabis-induced psychosis in youth.
For teens and young adults, marijuana use comes with increased risks
of suicidal thoughts, planning, and attempts.
And these high THC products can be bought almost anywhere,
from gas stations to dispensaries. I had no idea.
Talk to your children well before they experiment with today's potent THC products.
Get educated.
Help them understand the dangers are real.
Just say no, K-N-O-W. Go to justsayno.org today for the facts.
A public service message from Johnny's Ambassadors.
You know the national parks, but you may not know that they're supported by a strong foundation. A foundation for the future. We are the National Park Foundation, And together with your support, we're building a bold future where national parks are vibrant, protected, and welcoming. Today, tomorrow, forever. Learn more at nationalparks.org/foundation.
Mid-Columbia Today is a public affairs program of Bi-Coastal Media Columbia River, AM 1340 and 98.3 FM KIHR, News Radio 1300 and 103.9 KACI, and GorgeRadio.com. Now, back to Mark.
8:34 in the morning on Mid-Columbia Today. Wasco County Commissioner Scott Hagee is joining us here, not in the usual rotation, but wanted to have somebody on and talk maybe a little bit about the aftermath of the Oregon legislature and the transportation non-package in specific here. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Mark.
And we will point out, I want to point this out right away. Scott was kind enough to come in here. That, you know, the local governments don't have all the answers yet. I mean, that's
of course we do.
Well, I mean, in terms of, you know, sorting through a legislative session, it takes a while.
No, and especially this bill, you know, which I think was over 100 pages, which is a lot for an Oregon bill.
Yeah.
And it was obviously a comprehensive transportation bill, so it's complicated.
But I know from talking to county and city officials, not just Wasco County, but Hood River County, of course, also, and probably anywhere if I'd gone anywhere. You know, there was a lot of concern about there was a need to get a transportation package done, and it doesn't happen. Where does for county governments like yourself, where does this leave you without a transportation package?
Well, it leaves us short of funds.
Yep.
So the big challenge with transportation funding, if we just kind of go back, you know, we used to have the forest. We get you know, the forest cuts. The money coming out of the forest typically is what funds the roads. Obviously, that hasn't been happening at the levels it's happened. We have the secure rural schools, which is again kicking around. I heard the Senate had passed an SRS bill. It's going to the House, so we'll see if we can get that off the ground. We did get some money from the actual cut this year, so that all goes to roads and schools. But the real challenge is the way that we fund roads in Oregon is through largely gas taxes. And everybody knows that everybody wants a more efficient car that gets more miles per gallon, which means you use obviously less gas. And there's a lot of electric and hybrid vehicles that also use either no gas or less gas. So, and the gas tax itself does not have any, it doesn't go up with inflation. So the whole process and funding mechanism for roads is really flawed. And so unless you are increasing the gas tax amount, which is what they were intending to do, as well as fees and other things, but it's just not going to cover increasing costs for taking care of roads. So obviously we're short of funds. We're doing what we can. All counties are. We might be in a better place than some, but we're going to have challenges. So it's still the funding mechanism for roads is just problematic, bottom line. And there was some intention. So there was some indexing of the gas tax that they were doing. There's a whole bunch of stuff in this bill. It was very complicated.
You know, the 50-30-20, of course, split is what's key here. You get 30% as counties of the gas tax revenues that come into the state. You know, without this package, there still is a gas tax. What's existing is still there.
Yes.
For the reasons you outlined, it's not nearly enough at this point. For local governments, I'm not even sure you're keeping up on maintenance fully at this point. I mean, it depends on the government. I don't want to speak for what you guys are, but you're doing the best you can. I know that. Where does this need to get to? To be able to get to some sort of equilibrium where you can, A, make sure you maintain what you have, and then also deal with what growth may require you to do.
Yeah, it's a challenge. So what going into this session, the Association of Oregon Counties, which is our main kind of statewide organization for all counties, AOC, so a study was done on roads. The study determined that there was an additional about $834 million per year that all of the counties needed collectively to deal with roads. This was just on roads. So that's a big number. That's an annual number going forward. So Are we ever going to get there? I don't know. I don't really expect it, honestly. We have to figure out how we can be, you know, deal with things differently. But counties have 27,000 miles of road, 3,500 bridges. Wasco County personally has 650 miles of roads, and we have 124 bridges. So it's a difficult thing to try to figure out how you're going to pay for that, particularly when most programs, most road programs for counties in Oregon have scaled back significantly in the 1980s because of the forest situation. Right. And so our organization, most counties have, you know, reduced at that time to about half of what they were prior to that. So we've never, I don't think we've ever made it back to there. Yeah. I don't think we ever will make it back to there. So we have to figure out a way to deal with things.
You know, I mean, there may be some people going, well, can the counties dip into their general funds? But boy, that's problematic, isn't it?
It can be very problematic depending on what the status of your general fund is.
Right.
You know, generally speaking, like in Wasco County, I think in many other counties, because roads are dedicated funding streams, those funds go to roads and other funds go to other functions. So it's very clear that we don't put general fund money into roads, which is a big question. Like some people say, well, I pay my taxes too. And it's like, okay, but taxes, property taxes do not go towards roads. But gas taxes and all the other things do. So, you know, everybody in your county that drives a vehicle and buys gasoline and licenses it and everything else, you know, pays into that system.
You mentioned the Association of Oregon Counties. I would assume, and for those who aren't familiar, that's basically the organization, the counties all have their all the counties are involved in to plead their case, if you will, lobby for their best interest for local governments.
Correct.
I would assume that the AOC is going to be weighing in on this here pretty soon in terms of now that this is now that this the session has ended, no new package. I would think probably the AOC now gets back together and starts to think about what their next move is.
100% Yeah. I mean, like I said, that number that, that I mentioned, you know, over $800 million a year is a huge number. And, you know, other counties are struggling, you know, just to meet just to meet bills now.
How much does this get complicated? You know, for a smaller county like Wasco County, roads and bridges really are the vast bulk of what when we say transportation. And yes, you've got some public transportation, and yes, you bicycles and pedestrians, but in terms of the overall cost that's involved, it's relatively negligible.
Correct.
Cities might be a little different, but the counties in particular. But of course, in the bigger counties, that's not necessarily the case. How much does that start to confuse the process and also maybe hinder the smaller counties from getting what they need to maintain their basic road base?
You know, I would say that counties in general and cities as well. I mean, we are all together on this. The issue that was here. You know, this transportation issue, it was definitely, we were all together. We were pretty much hand in hand. Everybody, as you said, the split is a historic split. And that was something we worked very hard because at the through the session, there was lots of discussion about ODOT basically taking more and giving cities and counties less. So that was something we worked really hard for because any new funding we wanted to make sure was still split with that. But all I would say all the cities and the counties for the most part were on the same page and working hard. But yes, it's that obviously didn't pass. So we need to go back and we will, it's a very high priority for AOC and for LOC and other organizations in the county.
Are you hearing anything at this point? I mean, again, we're very early into this. You know, but special sessions already been brought up. And I explained it on the show that it was yesterday that you're usually governors don't call special sessions until they've got it lined up because you don't bring 90 people back and they sit there for however long. You want to make sure you've already got something before you go to the expense and the trouble of if you have a special session and it does nothing happens then it really looks bad on everybody at that point. But are you hearing any what might happen from here, or are we still too early to really know?
I think it's still too early. Clearly, this was a keystone legislation for for this session. So, and it was a huge failure.
Right.
It's really frustrating if you look back at what's happened. It was just like so much. You would have thought going into the session there was more, because they did a lot of road shows. They were out on the road. They were working on this package for a long time. And I would have thought that it would have been a lot more solid going in. And it just seemed like there was a lot of monkeying around. And I don't know exactly. I mean, they had a lot on their plate. I'm not blaming them, but it's like it is disappointing that nothing came out of it. And you know, at the end, they started, you know, just throwing stuff at the wall, like, well, let's just do this. And they couldn't do that. And it was just way too political.
And what made it odd was, if you looked also to the budget writing negotiations outside of transportation, those went really well. Yeah. I mean, you've got me. There were quotes after the session: Democrats complimenting Republicans, Republicans complimenting Democrats. I mean, that group that negotiated that, well, did their job, lack of a better term. Yeah. And it just seemed like this got into the higher leadership levels, and quite frankly, I think that might have crashed it in the long term. And it got involved in other ideals. And I'm sorry, I'm starting to editorialize.
No, that. I think you might be right. I mean, there was a lot of wrangling going on. And honestly, I think one of the challenges with it was an expensive piece of legislation.
Sure.
It was going to raise a lot of money, which means that people are going to pay a lot of money, which, you know, it was a lot of tax on our citizens. And I think there were people, Democrats and Republicans, that says it's too much. We need to figure out how to make it less. And but at that point in the session, it's like you would think they would have got through that and had it kind of sorted out. It's like, okay, let's not do this, but let's do that.
Well, there is a reality. We touched this, you know, with the gas tax. You talked about efficient cars, people using you know, electric vehicles, et cetera. We've had such a clean link. I mean, it's gas tax, roads, and transportation. It it made wonderful sense, you know, 50, 60, even 10 years ago.
Maybe.
But the reality is that's not going to be there. That's not going to change. This is a long-term talk. Yeah. Even this package would have been more of a short-term fix.
That's true. I mean, it did talk about, you know, the gas tax and index in it. That was a good feature of it. It also talked about, you know, getting electric vehicles and hybrids all on the system that would track miles versus gas tax. So it was heading in that direction. But I don't think it's a long-term solution either. You know, it's kind of one of these things. It's like, I mean, there are other states out there. What are they doing? And how we all have the same issue.
My worry short-term right now is if nothing gets done the next few months, I worry about... Because you know where the layoffs at ODOT are are they going to come from the grassroots and the people we want working? And we know that's where it's going to happen. The problem I fear is for areas like here that deal with winter weather. What's going to happen with our road clearing? I mean, we have basically 2 to 3 roads that gets us in and out of the gorge. That's just the reality of the geography here. And also, I know your road crews work with state crews on road clearing to get this done. Yep. I mean, this is going to have an impact. If something doesn't happen in the interim, and I keep thinking there eventually something's going to happen. There will be something will happen here. But I've got to think the reverberations of this could be the short term. The winter could be really interesting.
It could be. And honestly, I'm hopeful that we can all work together to kind of help this get through the situation, because there is ODOT, right? Yeah. ODOT is ODOT's the lion's share of all this money was going to them, and we've been hearing for a couple of years how struggling they are. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a lot to work out, but I can tell you that, you know, we will be trying to work and get what we can get done, and you know, doing the best job we can. But this issue needs to be solved. I'm not sure what the solution is. It's a very difficult issue to solve.
You mentioned it's not like your road crews have a lot of extra time to try to fill the gap. By the way, last I checked, they're pretty hardworking and a lean group as it was.
Well, like I said, you know, the road crew numbers are, you know, fractional of what it was back in the 80s. So, you know, and we don't have less roads. We generally have more roads.
Yeah.
So it's a challenge.
Got a couple more minutes left here. I probably would be remiss without asking about, we're coming off, of course, here, the horrible Rowena fire.
Okay.
And the wildfire bills that were around. The other part of this session that didn't really meet, I guess, expectation was the funding for wildfire prevention and fighting them, but also mitigation, which, as we learned with the Rowena fire, how important mitigation is, because that thing moves so fast. It was just a scramble to try to help save homes and lives. as of someone who lives is a government official in a fire-prone area. What do you leave thinking about this?
Well, there was some funding for wildfires that came through, so that was a good thing. And the governor was out here. We did a tour with her. We did a tour with Senator Wyden as well. So I think there's a significant awareness of what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
And everybody wants to help. The governor wants to help. The governor is going to help. But it's challenging, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, so right now, ODOT is typically the organization does some of the cleaning of these sites. And we just had a discussion about what's going on with funding there. Yeah. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, it's a big challenge. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that fire was particularly unfortunate just because of the number of primary residences that were lost. We have not experienced that kind of loss, maybe forever in our county.
Yeah, I mean, people always ask me on occasion, what's the worst fire I've ever covered? And I always tend to go, frankly, it depends on who you are with the work because if the ones that are closest to you and impact you are the ones the worst fires.
Right.
My answer now is this one, because of the amount of homes that were lost.
The interesting part about that is that I don't know what the final loss numbers are, but you know, 10-ish million. It's not big enough loss for FEMA to really become engaged. So the federal government is pretty not very engaged. So it's something we're having to deal with on our own. You see all these other catastrophes, and you know, FEMA comes in with trailers and housing and all this kind of stuff. They're not here.
Cleanup process, by the way. I don't know how closely involved you are on it. I know the sheriff's office has been heavily involved in emergency management. But I know there's going to be a plan put in place for cleanup work, right?
Correct. There is a plan. We're working on getting access agreements. We have to have agreements with the property owners in order to be able to access their property. Mm-hmm. But we are already engaged in and have underway trying to get the hazardous waste cleaned up. And then the second phase is cleaning all the other debris that needs to be cleaned up. So that's the goal, obviously. Until you get to there, you can't rebuild. So that's what our kind of short-term goal is right now.
I take it, you know, when we talk about the hazardous waste, this is going to take a while. I mean, goodness knows what you may find up there.
That is very possible. Hopefully, I think the whole cleanup is going to be great. And then, of course, the next step, we don't want to get there, but how are we going to get permits and, you know, get through the Gorge Commission? And we're working on that now. We've been working on trying. Yeah, all of these homes are in the National Scenic Area, and every one of them, you know, is potentially a challenge.
I hadn't even gotten to that point of thought yet, but you bring up a good point.
Yeah. We thought about it as soon as we heard, you know, structures were lost.
So. Are they going to do another one of the agency? Multi-agency. Yeah, marks.
Yes,
there we go.
I think those are continuing. There's several. They're more topical now. We're trying to selectively, you know, provide legal advice and all these kind of topics. So, yes, we're definitely still working on that. People are still struggling, you know. Most of the people are housed, I think, at this point, but the long-term, you know, recovery is really the challenge.
Scott Hagee, Wasco County Commissioner. Scott, thanks for doing this morning. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Came in on short notice. Coming up on 8:53, we'll wrap it up after this.
Hi, I'm J.R. Frakes, financial advisor with Edward Jones. I believe feeling rich is less about reaching a magic number and more about living life on your terms with financial strategies that help support a life you love. You can count on me to help you achieve what matters most to you, because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Contact me today at 509-774-6480, and let's find your rich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Celebrate America with Homegrown Value in Cascade Farm and Outdoors' latest mailer. All planters, bag soil, and fertilizers are 20% off. All regular price Danner footwear is $30 off. Get a Cascade Pro 3-pound hemlock sleeping bag for $15 off. Plus, July 2nd through 4th, all active military and veterans receive 20% off on most regular price merchandise as a thank you for your service. Save store-wide now at Cascade Farm and Outdoor.
The threat of wildfire poses a growing risk to Oregonians. And recent wildfires have provided some important lessons. You can prepare now by taking 3 important steps. Step 1. Contact your insurance company to make sure you have the right amounts and types of coverage. Step 2. Create a home inventory by taking photos or videos of your possessions in each room of your home. Step 3. Gather and make copies of important identifying and financial documents. Store them in the cloud or another secure location. These 3 actions can help you and your community be more resilient in the face of wildfire. Be wildfire ready by being insurance ready. Visit dfr.oregon.gov/prepare now to learn how. This message brought to you by the Oregon Division of Financial Regulation, the Oregon Association of Broadcasters, and this station.
All right, folks, let's get started. Parents, thanks for coming. As many of you know, I'm Coach Mather. Tonight I want to talk about the season, of which I only have one expectation, that everybody gets stronger. When I say get stronger, I'm not referring solely to physical strength. Sure, we'll be in the weight room, we'll be running stairs, but we're also going to focus on developing mental toughness and grit, because those are the characteristics that allow us to achieve greatness both on and off the court. So how do we develop those things? By getting comfortable with a challenge, by cultivating the confidence necessary to overcome adversity in all forms. That's why I coach. That's my purpose. Every member of this team can lean on me, and I'll teach them how they can lean on themselves and each other.
This message presented by the OSAA and the Oregon Athletic Directors Association.
Tune in weekday mornings at 8:05 and keep up with community events and issues with the Mid-Columbia Today Show on the Mid-Columbia's news leaders, AM 1340 and 98.3 FM KIHR, and News Radio 1300 and 103.9 KACI.
Mid-Columbia Today is brought to you by GorgeNet, Gorge Recovery Service, and Skyline Hospital. 8:56 in the morning on Mid-Columbia Today. We will mention here tomorrow on this show, we are going to talk the next door. Not sure what it's going to be. Yep, they're getting me the guest. Thursday, we're going to talk Hood River County 4-H, heading into Hood River County Fair, of course, coming up at the end of the month in July. We're getting to the fair season. We're going to talk about some of the things 4-H is going to be doing at Hood River County Fair coming up at the end of the month. And we will note, of course, that Friday we will not be on for the 4th of July. We do not do a show that day. Back on Monday the 7th with Dr. Mike Foss on Animals, who normally would be on the first Friday of the month, but it's 4th of July, so we're not going to be doing that. And then next Tuesday we'll talk, actually, both Hood River counties will have commission. I guess it's next week, actually, Scott Hagee's back here. I just realized that. I thought it was in 2 weeks. It's the second Tuesday of the month is next week. I think Scott's on the rotation. We'll have Scott back. We'll talk about other Wasco County things. We were talking really about the state legislative aftermath. And we're going to talk Hood River County on Tuesday of next week. Allison Williams and Jennifer Ewer, I'm sure we'll talk about what we talked about this morning with them. You get this pigtail where you just have that one Monday at the end of the month and it messed me up calendar-wise. It's next Tuesday Scott's on. Bring him back here. I do thank you for coming in, though. I did want to start to talk a little bit about the local impacts of the non-transportation package in the state of Oregon. Washington got one done, as we told you in the news. Their fuel tax went up today. But the point is, they have the same partisan divides, and they have the same issues, really. They figured it out. I better be careful here. I don't want to get myself ranting here and the show is going to end. So I better leave here. I think it's a good time for us to wrap it up. For Cameron Eisenberg in the studio, I'm Mark Bailey. We will talk to you again on... How many more seconds do I got left? Counting me down. Thank you. Welcome to live radio, folks, in a small market. Now we're done. I'm leaving. We'll talk to you again Wednesday.
The Mid-Columbia Today Show is a public affairs presentation of Bicoastal Media Columbia River. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the station, parent company, or of the sponsors. We welcome your suggestions for future shows. Call us at 888-786-1511. Thanks for listening to Mid-Columbia Today.
White Salmon is having a parade. Show us your patriotic pride this 4th of July at 11 a.m. Decorate your car and yourself with red, white, and blue. Veterans, spouses, and widows are invited to ride in the parade. White Salmon is seeking volunteers with vehicles to help transport those veterans. Lineup begins at 10 at Tahomish at the bike park. Please call the Mount Adams Chamber of Commerce at 509-493-3630 to sign up.